Hello and welcome to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spicy Soup. It's time to get fired up. Make sure you find the Raptor Show wherever you listen to podcasts. Listen, rate, review, subscribe to the show. I'm your host, Wim Liu. I'm joined by co-host Blake Murphy. Tough day for you, Blake, especially having to do double duty.
Man, what did I do to deserve this?
Raptors lose by 48.
Yeah, a franchise record, by the way.
We'll get to that shortly. And then, you know, because I'm like, all right, the Raptors are done. I got to do the React Pod, but, like, let me at least, like, put something on the TV in the background.
Nope.
So I switch on my favorite channel in the whole wide world, Sportsnet, and boom, I look at the Jays game. I think they were down 5-0 at that point. I think they lost ultimately 8-0. They got one hit, which I didn't even know until after the game because I had the game on mute because I was doing the reaction show. But, man, the first thought I had was, Blake, this is tough.
Yeah, so Raptors set a record for largest defeat. They're close to setting a record for longest losing streak in franchise history. The Toronto Blue Jays became the first team in the history of baseball, which is like 500 years long, to get no hit and one hit in the first seven games of the season. Stuff. And by the way, as we're watching all this unfold, Malachi Flynn, for the first time in his life at any level, drops 50 piece.
Oh, wait, hold on. That's not true, because if you're going to add the caveat of at any level.
You're saying Seattle Pro-Am? No. Said no level.
Well, I had a personal experience going to TMU, Toronto Metropolitan University, where the Ball Don't Stop summer program in Toronto was held, and Malachi was in that with Scotty, and Malachi put up at least 70 in that one too.
Okay, so Malachi doesn't count that one then, because he told our pal James Edwards of The Athletic that it's his first 50 piece at any level. In high school, I had 49 and my coach took me out. I still have a grudge.
So he
got the 50 piece. So just obviously very, very happy for Malachi. The tape on it is really funny. The Hawks are defensively exactly what you remember them as when the Raptors were playing semi-competitive basketball against them.
But
a lot of fun for Malachi Flynn, but really did feel like just kind of twisting the knife at the Raptors right now.
I was so happy. I was actually so happy for Malachi, because he's obviously in Toronto didn't work out. Who knows if it even worked out in Detroit? It didn't really work out with the Knicks, but he was a really nice guy.
Yeah.
And at the start of the season, I remember, you know, going back to this merciful start of the season, we were so much younger and happier and cheerier, even, you know, in spite of how bad last season was. But one of the storylines at the start of the season was how much belief they were and support they were showing to Malachi. Dennis was coming on the show every week and talking about how much, you know, he's taking him under his wing. And Darko was talking about Malachi as if he was his son. Like, just, you know, you could do better, smile more. Maybe he was like, you know, Malachi, you're very ugly, you don't smile. Goodness, what a year.
Yeah.
And it didn't quite work out, but I really was rooting for him. And he was always good to interview as well. So happy for Malachi that he got his 50-piece, whatever, the Pistons lost. It's not about wins and losses at this point. It's about wins and lessons. And on the Raptors side, the lesson is, first off, who are some of these guys?
Well,
can we start with Malik Williams?
Yeah, I mean, if you want. So the Raptors signed Malik Williams yesterday. We did like 30 seconds on it on the show. You know, I kind of gave you the rundown off air, and I put some tweets out. I got to watch one of his games from, like, obviously I knew who he was from Louisville, and the 905 played Sioux Falls earlier in the year, but he had a recent game against Cleveland's G League affiliate, where Pete Nance and Isaiah Mobley were both down there, who are two of the better, like, four, like, bigger two-way guys in the G League, and he looked really, really good against them. So I was like, okay, I see what's there. But so I wrote about Malik Williams last night, because heading into that game, what else am I going to write about? And his story's cool, but like he's not an NBA player right now, and he's started a game his first day with the team and had to play 31 minutes
against
a top four at worst team in basketball and the best defense in the league by far. Like, it was just that's the least fair landing spot you could ask for a guy in his NBA debut, on top of which, like, he's not an NBA guy yet. This is about getting a look at him for the summer and for summer league and stuff, not about helping your NBA team right now.
Yeah, so you're not saying this based on the fact that the Raptors signed him the day of, threw him into the starting lineup that allowed Kelly to finally mercifully get one day off. He had been playing every single game. Him and Grady were the only two that played every single game. Grady's now our Iron Man. Malik joins the team the same day delivery, okay? He goes 0 for 7 from the field. You know, airballed a couple jumpers, got blocked a couple times.
But NBA possession, yeah. Jaden McDaniels just like erased him at the rim.
Right. But you're not making this judgment based on yesterday. Because obviously it's not fair to – honestly, out of all the guys who played yesterday, there's nothing on Malik, honestly. There really isn't. The guy is just a stranger to the whole situation. Yeah. He's walking in like Childish Gambino did in Community, basically, with Donald Glover.
Yeah, with Everything's on Fire.
Everything is just
also,
on fire.
Referring to his acting career still as Childish Gambino when he has like Community yeah, and true. Atlanta and Mr. and Mrs. Smith is like a director now as well is wild.
Mr. and Mrs. Smith, a bad show that I did enjoy watching. But in any case, yeah, I mean, I don't blame him, but what's his history, at least, the background
yeah,
for people
so
who weren't familiar?
I wrote about this for Sportsnet last night. You can go check it out. And it's not a deep feature. It's just kind of the quick notes. But, like, he was a five-star recruit. So he's at Louisville, and the tools never turned into production. Like, he was at Louisville at the same time as Jordan Wara. Those were teams with big expectations and things like that. Never came around. He lost a bunch of time to foot injuries at one point. He got suspended by Louisville at one point for the conduct detrimental to the program. There was just
okay.
It just didn't click, and it never really came around. So in 2022, not only did he go undrafted, he didn't even play in summer league. Where most guys who go undrafted, if you come from a major program or whatever, someone's going to kick the tires on you. He didn't get a deal until January after that year. He signed in Poland as their third string center. Almost got cut multiple times
String in Poland?
Yes. Got cut multiple times because over there you only get so many import slots.
Uh-huh.
So if you're not doing it or there's someone else available, you're going to potentially get cut. Anyway, he ends up starting on that team by the end of the year. They win their tier of European championship.
Okay.
It's crazy. So this year, no summer league again. Has to go to Sioux Falls training camp as a walk-on, like similar to the Alfonso McKinney story back in the day City.
Yeah.
He's a walk-on to that team, gets cut in training camp, and then ends up, one of their players gets called up the NBA, so they're like, oh, we'll sign him as an emergency guy like the 905 have done this year, and he only sticks around because Cheick Diallo goes to Japan, and it opens up a roster spot. That was in mid-November, and by January, he's starting. By March, he's playing against, Mobley and Nance and stuff like that. The brothers, Mobley and Nance, not the actual Mobley and Nance.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, part of the families.
And, now he's in the NBA. So, it's a really good story. And I think the Raptors look at the fact that he's improved a ton start to finish last year in Poland and start to finish this year in the G League is encouraging moving forward. Mm-hmm. But, this is a guy who got cut from the G League less than 6 months ago. Like, him playing 31 minutes starting in an NBA game is he's not ready yet. Even if you watch some of the tape from March in the G League, he's not there yet. This is about, hey, we want to get to know the guy and see if maybe we want to bring him in for the summer. It's not about his NBA talent right now.
We're gonna bring in Garrett Temple. Garrett, we're discussing your newest teammate, Malik Williams, and Blake had a really good rundown of sort of just his last year to date. I'm curious, in terms of just, when did Malik join the team and how much preparation did he have before going up against Minnesota last night?
What's going on, guys? Good morning.
Also, good morning as well. Thank you for joining us, as always.
He joined the team yesterday. And so we didn't have a shoot around because it's a back-to-back. So we had a team meeting in the morning, around 12 o'clock in Minnesota. And I think he went to the gym before that just to with the guys that weren't going to play, just to kind of walk through plays and get to know a couple of the things that we do on offense and defense. And then went through shoot around and coach said, went through our team meeting and coach said at the team meeting, this has got to be the first time in history that, or one of the first times in history that a guy comes straight from the G League and starts right away. Mm-hmm. So. That hasn't played one NBA minute. So he gets to go against Rudy Gobert and Naj Reid. So right into the fire, the number one team in the West. So yeah, it was yesterday. So we all met him. I met him yesterday. Obviously, Jordan knew him. Jordan played with him, I think, in college. And he thrust right into the fire right away.
How much different is that? Obviously, we've asked you a couple times about Jamias Ramsey, Kobe Simmons coming in, Javon's coming in and stuff. When it's a big man instead of a guard coming in, how different is that adjustment for you as a leader, but also the team getting used to that guy or that guy picking up the system and stuff?
I think the biggest difference is not necessarily whether it's a guard or a big. I think it's a whole different team. Like he didn't come from 905, so he doesn't know our coverages and what we call. And the fact that he's so young. So Jemai has played in Sacramento for, you know, a year or two, and Javon has played in the league again before. I think the fact that he didn't come from our system and the fact that this was his first NBA game was probably the biggest difference, more so than the big and small. Him being a big, you know, I'm able to tell him, you know, things of that we like to see as bigs. I asked him, what is game like? Do you roll? Do you pop? He let me know. He was like, I'm not a lob guy. Just letting you know that now.
Okay. All right.
You know, I got some touch, you know what I'm saying? I got floaters and I could shoot a little bit, but, you know, just so I need to know what his game is so we can make sure we play off each other the right way. If I'm looking for him to be a Mo G, then, you know, I got to ask him about that, you know, if he's a guy that can pass it. So it's just a matter of getting to the nuances, especially since he's going to play a lot of minutes. You know, obviously the other guys that come in when they sign these contracts, they may not even play the first game, you know, the second game. And so the other guys, you kind of, Jemai's, I was able to play with him in like the conditioning league and play groups a couple of times early on. So I knew his game. I could tell he could shoot. I could tell he's a defender. With Malik, the first time I played with him was that tip off. So it's just a different dynamic there.
Yeah, that's got to be really unique. I thought you were going to say, I'm going to offer him tips as a fellow big. Because I was going to say, you spent a decent time guarding Naz Reid as well last night, you know?
No, I started on him, no question. I mean, I was guarding AD.
Yeah.
I told AD, you know, my wife sent me a screenshot of Bron telling JJ on his podcast, like, yo, they got Garrett Temple at the five, at X5 right now. And that's just that's the situation we're in right now, man.
Yeah.
I definitely spent a lot of time guarding Nas, fellow LSU guy, love him to death, love how his growth, you know, talk about somebody that was, you know, kind of counted out. After going, like, it was very great coming out of high school.
Yeah.
LSU, he did, you know, for whatever reason, went undrafted, was always very talented. Just glad to see him thriving. But that's the situation we're in. And, you know, my thing is, I've always loved challenges. Mm. And I think the best teams, every player on the team takes whatever challenge the coach gives them and tries to thrive in that. And, so that's what I try to show to everybody around. Like, I don't care. You want me to guard AD? Great. Yeah. Let me guard him. You want me to guard Ann Edwards? Great. Whoever you need me on, whatever you need us to do, let's go do it to the best of our ability.
Well, I mean, this is why when people talk about leading by example, like, this is exactly that. I mean, you know, the team's obviously in a difficult situation, right? We're talking about, like, you know, you're bringing in Malik. He's goes through, walk through, and then immediately starts against, you know, the number one team in the West. You know, you are a guard, let's be honest, right? You played some point guard, you played some shooting guard, now you're guarding AD. By the way, you did get a chase down block on AD, you know, like a little, I think they call it a steal.
Yeah.
But we were cheering from upstairs when we saw that. We were like, yeah, Garrett, do it for the Raptors show.
So the thing is, though, I'm going to talk about that. Yeah. I stole AD the ball when he tried to post me up in the first half. I stole the ball.
Yeah.
The one that everybody thought was a block, I got to be honest, I didn't block that. RJ blocked that.
Oh,
like, it looks like I blocked it.
It did look like you blocked it. Yeah.
I saw the film, and it looks very much like I blocked it. But it's just the way it looked. I feel like RJ got his hand on it. Oh, I know, okay. I didn't. Or maybe we just both fouled him, and it looked like a block.
Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
I got to be honest. That wasn't me. I appreciate it, though.
Wow. Okay. Well, still, you're going out there. You're proving by example. But I think the more difficult thing for the younger guys is, like, how do you not just, like, let go of the rope, right? Because I do feel like, you know what? We can all see the situation. You guys are playing with eight guys. A lot of these guys are inexperienced. People aren't expecting wins, but when it gets to that point where it's like, all right, it's a 48-point loss, it's a 40-point loss, it's a 30-point loss, a lot of that just comes down to, like, guys letting go of the rope at a certain point and starting to play sloppy. And I thought a lot of that happened last night as well. I don't know. I guess my question is, how do guys not do that?
It's just the mentality. It's a mindset. It's a competitiveness that, you know, I think you have to have in order to be a really good team. So individually, you have to have it to have a long career, have a good career, and then you have to have enough guys that have that mentality to have a really good team. And then obviously talent you know, on top of that, makes you championship caliber. But I think it's, you know, that's one thing we say, no matter who we have, because you see these teams like Washington, you see these teams like Memphis beating teams. Yeah. So it's not about winning the game, but it's about being competitive. And I think the last two or three games, we haven't done that. And we gotta fix it, because it's not going to get any easier. Nobody's going to feel sorry for us. So we have to have a mindset of exactly what you said, not letting go of the rope at any point, and coming out here and competing every single night as best we can.
Okay, so you play against that team last night, and obviously that's a really tough loss for you guys. It's the biggest one that you've had as an NBA player. It's the biggest one the Raptors have had. Some of that is also the Wolves are really, really good. What do you make of that? I guess also we joked, you know, we just talked about you guarding Anthony Davis and Naz Reid. You were also guarding Anthony Edwards. So I guess I want to start on that. Like how, like if we're talking about the toughest one-on-one guys to check in the league right now, like how high up there is Anthony Edwards?
Oh, he's very high. He's extremely high up there. Obviously I haven't, the last year and a half kind of, I haven't been in the practice of guarding guys, just being completely honest, not playing, but I think back to when I was playing a lot and being the guy, like I'm guarding the guys. Just seeing Ant, the thing about him, he's so athletic. He's so offensively gifted. He has basically every shot in his bag, and he's willing to take every shot. Like he's not a guy that's the one thing that he can grow. Just reading the game and understanding when to take his spots and, you know, but as a one-on-one guy, he's got to be top five for sure. You know, with his physicality, his athletic ability, he's probably top three in terms of toughest to guard. And then he started making threes against us. He was off the last three, four games, and he started hitting them against us. So, yeah, he's very tough to guard. Very tough to guard.
What about this Wolves team as a whole? Again, you mentioned they're at the top of the West. The top of that West is crazy. We don't know what the timeline is like exactly for them to get Karl-Anthony Towns back, but they're the number one defense in the league, like by far statistically. How far do you think that team can go after seeing them like that?
I think the biggest thing is their defense, man. You know, they have so much length on the defensive end. You know, guys were talking about it at halftime. You know, Grady maybe mentioned, he's like, Jaden McDaniels, I pump faked him and he flew by, and then he still blocked my shot. Like, yeah. How does that happen? And the relentlessness that they play with on defense.
Yeah.
So, you know, when you have guys that can guard on ball, and then you can just send them to Rudy. You know, Rudy's a guy that changes shots, you know, deters shots. I think the one concern about them in the playoffs is just experience. You know, that's why they brought in Mike Conley, and Mike's going to be great for them, calming them down. But he's only one guy. Kyle Anderson has great experience, and Rudy as well. But their guys, Ant and Cat, this is going to be, you know, when Cat comes back, them being able to mesh all three of those bigs that all three can play and all three have big impacts on the game. I think for them, getting Cat back as early as they can will be, you know, paramount. And they have the ability to match up well with different teams because they can go big and small. It's just going to be the experience. Mm-hmm. And them going through the, you know, Ant and Cat honestly going through the growing pains of different playoff situations, matchups, learning how to read the game in the playoffs. If, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they go, depends on who they match up against too. You know, it's all about matchups in the playoffs. Like you got Phoenix at 7, who's beating everybody by 20 and 30 now, you know, is it going to be the Lakers? Is it going to be Golden State? You know, like you never know who they're going to play against. So it's going to be very, very interesting, but their defense is their calling card right now. And I think they'll be able to lean on that. And that bodes well for them.
Yeah,
that bodes really well for them.
Gary, you mentioned the fact that Minnesota has this like relentlessness on defense, right? They really get after, and you know, for a long time, and you've been in the league and you play Minnesota a lot, like that was not what they're known for. In fact, it was like the opposite. You know what I mean? Like Minnesota was like an unserious team for a long time, or they're a young team, like trying to figure things out. But you would never say they were a defensive, like, you know, like they get after it on defense. I think obviously you add Rudy Gobert, right? A guy who's won so many defensive player of the years. That's going to help. You add Jaden McDaniels. We're too used to saying Jalen, his brother. Jaden obviously really gets after Anthony Edwards. When he really wants to, he really locks in too.
Yeah.
So, but is it like the players bring that intensity, or is it the coaching with Chris Finch? Like, how do you generate that defensive identity and that defensive intensity that you need to win at a high level?
That's a great question. Well, you know, Chris Finch was my first coach in the pros. He coached me in the G League.
Oh, word.
With the Rio Grande Valley Vipers. It was his first year coaching over here, my first year playing. Love Chris, love Finchy to death. Gave me a lot of confidence on the offensive side of the ball. He's an offensive mind. Now, I think Finch understands you have to play defense in order to win games. Win championships, you have to be a top 10 defensive team. But he also has such a great offensive mind, so he delves this responsibility defensively to his defensive coordinator. But a lot of it has to do with your personnel. You know, they've done a great job bringing in guys that can guard. And, you know, they've, I guess, reiterated to them that defense is what is going to help us win. You know, we have guys that can score for us. And like you said, Jaden, obviously, Kyle Anderson is a very underrated defender. Rudy, obviously, Mike on the ball is really good, just understands. And Ant on the ball is a beast. Now, off the ball, he gets a little, you know, relaxed and lackadaisical and loses guys. A lot of high-end guards do that in the NBA. I mean, John Wall was like that when we played in D.C. On the ball, he's a monster. And then off the ball, he just, you know, he'd lose guys because he's kind of uninterested off the ball. On the ball is competitiveness. Mm-hmm. I'm athletic. I can just lock you up. So that's a, you know, one thing that he has to get better at. But I think it has a lot to do with the coach letting guys know what we need to do, but then the personnel that you have actually having the mindset of doing it. And because at the end of the day, it's an old adage. Coaches can't go out there and play. You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink. So it's about the guys on the court doing the actual defensive schemes that are out there. Any scheme can work if you do it at a high level and you have the personnel to do it right. You know, Rudy Gobert is much better in a pick and roll defense, dropping, keeping, you know, stopping the lobs than I would be. He's 7'2", and you know what I'm saying? So personnel definitely matters. And you just have to have the coaches just putting you in a situation to utilize the personnel the right way.
Speaking of personnel being utilized in different ways, I want to go outside the Raptors here, but to someone Raptors relevant, someone you were doing shooting competitions with earlier in this year, Malachi Flynn dropped a 50 piece last night. When you check your phone and you see that, first of all, like statistically, it is the least likely 50 point game in NBA history. Nobody has ever had a lower scoring average and dropped 50 than Malachi Flynn. So out of nowhere, even with Detroit, he was only averaging 6 points a game before this one with the Pistons. How surprised were you? And then second to that, how happy for him are you?
So I found out when I was walking in the locker room, and I was, you know, people got to understand, I love Mal like a brother. When he got traded, you know, we were in the room. We, you know, upset together. Love my young fella, man, like, for real. He was one of the closest guys I got to on the team before the trade. And so when I heard it, I was, you know, kind of upset that I heard that, because we should be thinking about a 50-point – we should be thinking about a 50-point loss. But once the air cleared and we, you know, calmed down, I knew I had to hit him. I heard he was 18 for 25. So we get on the plane, I text him, then I FaceTime him. And I was, ecstatic for him because of what he's going through this season, you know, having a chance to actually show that he can be an NBA player this year, and then getting traded to New York, and then getting traded to again. And then being in a situation where he was backing up, you know, he's the third string guard on a team that's, you know, has the second worst record in the league, being in his fourth year. And I talked to him. He said, bro, I didn't even think I was going to play.
Wow.
You know, Cade was still playing until, you know, and with Cade and Sasser play, then I'm out. I don't play. He's like, KU was playing until like the, till right before we tip off. He just couldn't go. And I got to play. And I said, tell me about it, man, how I felt. He said, I just, you know, got a couple minutes to fall and some free throws early on. And it was up from there. Off the bench, man, 34 minutes. And
yeah.
I think he didn't even start the second half. He came in like the 6-7 minute mark and had 33 in the second half, man. And I got to go back and I got to watch it.
Yeah.
You know, I hit him up right away. You know, me, him, and Dennis are in a group chat. We were really close. And I text the group chat and Dennis said, yeah, man, I hit him right after the game. So I FaceTimed him and I was just hyped. I was so excited for him, man. It was crazy. I was talking to some guys in Minnesota. Anthony Tolliver was at the game. I went and talked to him after the game. And we talked about Malachi at 50, and it brought up Corey Brewer's 50.
Yeah.
And
that was like 20 transition layups.
That was such, yeah, that was so unlikely because nobody, Corey Brewer having 50. And then I said, yeah, but Miles is probably more unlikely. And then, like you said, you read the stat. It's the most unlikely 50 ever. But I'm so happy for my guy. So happy for him.
For sure. Yo, you know, honestly, you're putting in perspective, but like, I know you've been around a lot of trades and all that kind of stuff. You've been on multiple teams yourself, but I mean, like, the reaction, the fact that, you know, you and Malachi were close, he gets dealt. You and Dennis were close, he gets dealt. OG, everyone loves OG. Like, he's such a lovable guy. Yeah. He gets traded. Obviously, as part of that trade, Precious, Pascal, you know, like, I don't know, man. Like, how does a locker room recover after all those, like, you know, big departures like that? Well, people that, like, you know, had time and investment here in Toronto.
This is the most eventful season I've ever been a part of.
Yeah.
Period, point blank. I mean, it's hard to recover. It's very difficult to recover. You know, you got to think about a guy like Chris Boucher that's been here so long and seen so much change in this year, and then gets injured. You know what I'm saying? You think about Scotty, who was with those guys for, you know, his first 3 years, and then so much change this year. It's not easy, but this is the one, the, you know, not the middle ground, but one side of the NBA. You know, the NBA, their business, you know, they might have one or two trades. It's on, you're on this side, one or two trades, and then, you know, you have maybe three or four, you're on this side, but then we're on the other side of it with probably the most trades I've seen on a team since I've been on, for sure, the most turnover on a team. So it's the league, it's the business we're in. And, you know, you do this obviously to find some type of sustainability in a roster. And that's what it is.
Okay, before we let you go here, Garrett, this weekend it'll be officially announced, but Shams broke the news yesterday. I don't know why we need to break the news on stuff like this early, but your boy Vince is going into the Hall. What's that like? Like, is he allowed to talk about it yet, or it's not official? Like, are you allowed to text him about it and say congrats, or are you waiting until the official? How's that been?
Nah, you know, I told y'all about the group chat we had. Yeah. So I text Chauncey first, and then I text, and then I think Jay Jax text our group chat with me, him, and G Hill, and said, the old man going into the Hall. Because we had texted him when he got nominated, obviously.
Yeah.
And he was like, man, it's unreal. So, I mean, to answer your question, I'm allowed to text him. I don't have nothing to do with it. I'm going to just. If it doesn't happen, I'm like, oh, my fault, bro. I'm just going off what, you know.
Yeah.
They're never wrong, right? Yeah. But, yeah, he's ecstatic, man. And it's just, you know, both of those guys' careers, him and Chauncey. But Vince is – I mean, I think Vince was so underrated as a player. I mean, he was looked upon more as like a superstar because of his dunking ability. But what he did game to game, and you know, in terms of scoring the ball, like, was elite. And you know, it's great to see him get his flowers. I'm excited for him, man. I'm really excited for him, for sure.
Well, that'll be the first Raptor officially to go in the Hall, which would be really, really good. And hopefully he's followed soon after by two more, Kyle, DeMar. I mean, I feel like these guys are all your friends, basically, man. You might be one of the most popular guys in the league. This is what we're figuring out off of all these interviews. He's like, yeah, I texted Chauncey. I'm like, what? What's the connection there? You know, but yeah. You know,
Chauncey, my first, like, one of my, I think my second start in the NBA, fourth start in the NBA. Yeah. I was with the Spurs, and I was playing against Chauncey Billups. Antonio McDyess was the starting four for us in San Antonio. It's my rookie year. And he came up to me before the game and was like, Chauncey was asking about you, because I'm playing point guard. Mm-hmm. I'm going against Denver. Chauncey Billups, JR, Nene, Carmelo. Oh,
yeah. That was a talented team.
The squad with Denver. And I'm like, well, what did he say? He was like, he was just asking me about your game and stuff. So we won the game. After the game, mm-hmm. Chauncey was like, I like your game, young fella. You can be high in this league.
Wow.
Dang, big shot talking to me, man. Golly.
Yeah.
So since then, we've been tight. And that's my guy. That's my guy.
All right.
Yeah.
Garrett, man, we appreciate you. We could talk to you like for the entire
show. If we
show.
Didn't have a pre-tape to air in the next segment, yeah.
Yeah, we got to bump you for Eric Corey, man. Blame Coach Corey for that one, all right? All right?
No problem. No problem, bro.
I appreciate you, Garrett. And we'll catch up with you again
Thanks,
next
y'all.
Week. All right. Garrett Temple. What's they going to have him do next, man? Guard Giannis?
Maybe.
Yo, this guy got to do everything. You got to do everything on the court for the Raptors. Then he got to come care of the Raptors show as well. Appreciate Garrett Temple a lot, man. Seriously. So, genuinely, you could tell. Like, such a good guy.
Yeah. Man. There's a reason he has all these friends and everyone is text friendly with him and stuff. Like, from legends down to, guys who are just coming in the door.
Yeah. There you go. Okay, we're going to take this break, but my laptop is frozen. Blake, can you take us out to the break?
I can take us out to the break. On the other side, Raptors 905 head coach Eric Corey joins us. This has been Blake Murphy and Will Liu. You're listening to the Raptors show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new chunky, spicy soup.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL, the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Raptors show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. I'm your host, Wayne Malou. Big thanks to Garrett Temple for joining us in segment one. Blake Murphy, co-host. What do we have for segment two?
The other day, I spoke to Eric Corey, not Eric Green, Eric Corey, who's head coach of Raptors 905 this season and last. He's now rejoined the Raptors as an assistant coach the rest of the way here. So, yeah, we talked about kind of how tough the 905 season has been, and then focus more on some of the individual successes some of these guys were seeing. Now, this interview took place before the Malik Williams signing, so we didn't get his Malik Williams take. But yeah, talk to him about Kobe, Javon, Moji, guys like that.
Okay, so let's hear that interview.
Joined now by Raptors 905 head coach and Toronto Raptors assistant coach for the rest of the season, Eric Corey. Eric, how's it going, man? End of a tough season, but you're back with the Raps now. How are things?
I'm doing well, thanks. All wrapped up now, and excited for the home stretch here.
I want to talk mostly about the Raptors 905 season, but what are these last couple weeks like for you where you now kind of rejoin the Raptors? Are you back in like your old role when you were on the bench? Are you focused mostly on your 905 guys who are up? What's that like for you right now?
I'm really just being around and lending a helping hand wherever I can. Obviously, it's a great staff that has been doing just fine without me all year. So I'm just here to kind of like observe, help out, and just lend a hand wherever I can.
Did Jamma tell you how good an assistant coach I was for him in the media game?
Not yet. I'll make sure to ask him.
Yeah, I can't believe that hasn't made the rounds yet.
Oh, come on. I'm sure it's just too good that he doesn't want to threaten other people's jobs.
Of course. So this was your second year in the job as head coach of Raptors 905. Tough season for you guys with a lot of injuries, a lot of not having the NBA guys and things like that. But big picture, how do you feel your second season with the 905 went?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Like you said, tough injury or tough season record-wise. A lot of ups and downs. Started out the year with a whole bunch of injuries right away, which gave everybody a lot of opportunities to play, which was great. And guys got to get a sense for what the league is like. Then we started to get healthy near the end of the showcase portion. We had some good success. It was a fun time. And middle portion of the year was pretty solid. And then, you know how the G League is, the Raptors all of a sudden got a bunch of injuries and took a bunch of the guys back there. So it was a lot of ups and downs, but overall, a really fun year. Great group of guys. It was a pleasure to work with every day. Everyone got a little bit better, which is always one of the big priorities in the G League, and it led to some individual success too.
definitely individual success, and I want to circle back to that in a second, because you guys have graduated a ton of guys to the NBA, which is, you know, probably even more than the record and the championship from 2016 and things like that. Part of the reason, right? Like that's a big part of it, or 2017 rather, the championship. So getting those guys to the next step is a big part. But I wanted to, the craziness that you guys have dealt with, like, everyone knows that's part of the G League. Nick Nurse has told a million stories. Darko has told some stories. But Darko even said the other day he's never seen it like this. Like, and that's talking about at the NBA level. So yeah. The trickle down to you guys of you're dealing with injury stuff and the Raptors are taking all your players, not just the two ways, but calling your guys up proper from the G League. Yeah. There was, and I'm hoping you can share this story a little bit because I've alluded to it on air, but there's a game against Greensboro this year where you guys had to, like, last-minute Uber people to the game just to have enough players. I can't imagine you're going to have to repeat that at any point in your career, but yeah. How close a call was that to not having enough guys to go?
Oh, it was something else. Credit to Luke. He was scanning through the available player pool that also met the criteria that they could make it to the game in time to be available.
Yeah, because you can't just, like, tag me in. It has to be someone in the player pool, right?
For sure. They would have had to go through all their medical already. They can't just jump on in. So there's really a lot of work by Luke. They got there on time, and then it was pretty funny where usually you do your shooting groups before the game where guys kind of warm up. But for them, they had to learn the entire system, offense and defense. So we're trying to teach as much as they can. And you can see the Greensboro assistants on the other side of the court, pen and pad, taking notes. So, oh, that's what this play is. Oh, that's what that play is. And we basically had to give everything away. But without that, they would have just been playing basketball freestyle where the rest of the team is kind of trying to be on the same page.
And a couple of those guys who got the kind of unexpected player pool opportunities ended up turning it into some decent run with you guys. Jaden Dallaire ended the season, you know, in the rotation for you guys after being one of those kind of emergency call-ups. How much, obviously, like, you can't execute your offense fully. You can't really, you know, if Grady's down there for one of those games, you can't really evaluate how he looks with two guys he just met 5 minutes before the game and who don't know the system and stuff. But in terms of those individual players, how like high fidelity is that information? Like, you learn about them pretty quick, I'd imagine, right?
For sure. And these guys are really sharp. They've played a bunch of different systems before. So they did a really good job of picking up the play calls. Where for the most part, we kept the playbook relatively straightforward to plays or actions, I would say, that most guys have run before, even if it's different names. We didn't try to overcomplicate it. But yeah, to your point, there was a game at Long Island where we had five of our regulars, Grady being one of them, and three guys that we picked up that day. And Grady just had to play basketball with guys he had never met before. So it's pretty tough for everybody involved when we get into those situations.
So Grady's an example of how, you know, the win-loss record is not everything in the G League, and maybe even a guy's individual stat line isn't everything. Some of what guys are working on down there maybe doesn't pop in the G League, doesn't show up in the stat sheet, etc. When you look at this season, the way that you guys helped Grady get from where he was over those first couple weeks to where he is now, where he looks very, very comfortable at the NBA level, how big a part of how you evaluate the season that you guys had is Grady kind of finding his way and using the 905 en route?
For sure. And it's so great that the 905 and the Raptors are really in sync. Coach Darko from day one has invited me into every meeting, brought me along so that way I can execute exactly his vision at the 905 level as well. So when there is somebody like Grady or one of the two ways, they're not playing two different styles of basketball. They're coming and spending time with us and being able to play Raptor basketball while they're with us. And those 30, 35, 40 minutes that he can play are going to be really valuable. And in his case, it's tough for him. You know, when he's with the 905, he's the number one guy on the scouting report. Teams are trying to show, like, hey, I'm going to lock down this lottery pick. And at the other end, we're going to attack and do everything. And then, of course, it's a different situation up here. So at times, and Grady and I have spoke about this, it could be like almost tougher in the 905 for him than it is at the Raptors level, even though the level of competition's different. Here he's playing with guys who are going to set him up and make sure to find him whenever he's open. And 905, obviously, is a different league, right? So he doesn't have the same talent surrounding him. And especially on games where he's meeting three or four new guys the day of the game as well. So I give him a lot of credit. He worked super hard. He was completely bought in his time with us, and it was awesome to see him have a great second half of the season.
And I got to ask him the other day about, hey, you were starting alongside Javon just a couple weeks ago with the 905, and now Javon's getting starts with the Raptors. Obviously, Kobe Simmons, Mo G, before he got hurt, DJ Carton, you know, these guys from 905 getting some NBA opportunities. Let's start with Javon. What have you seen from him? Like, this is even for a guy who thrived as a two-way and was putting up huge numbers in the G League, got the contract converted and everything, this is a lot of opportunity for a guy who was coming off the bench in the G League last year.
Yeah, it's been awesome to see. Javon put in so much work this summer and throughout the season. He is a heck of a player. He gets downhill with the best of them, and his shot is to a point where you can't close short at all. If you're not running at him, he's going to knock it down. That's both catch and shooting off the bounce. The biggest thing for me with Javon is a lot of the focus this year was helping him to be more of a point guard as opposed to a purely combo guard. And his voice has grown so much this year. His communication, his leadership on the court, which has been really cool. So that's one of the most exciting parts. And he's a heck of a defender. When he's locked in, nobody's really going around him or through him. So it's been really fun to see him get this opportunity with the Raptors and make the most of it.
You know, I like my guys who had big steal rates in college. So Javon, I understood the appeal. So Kobe Simmons is backing him up right now on a 10-day with the Raptors. He's been with you guys pretty much all year. Now, a bit more of a known commodity. This is, I think, his sixth season in the G League. But where did you see growth from Kobe this year? And how stoked were you guys for him to get this kind of reward call up at the end?
Yeah, Kobe definitely deserved it. He's such a great guy. He's the leader in the locker room for sure. Communicates extremely well. He's so young for how much of a vet he actually is. To your point, he's been around 6-7 years, but he's still a young guy, and he's able to communicate with the guys in the right way to push them along and say, hey, look, I know we're in the G League right now, but if we're not practicing the way we're supposed to be practicing and executing the way we're supposed to be executing, it's going to be really tough once you take the next step. And he's a great example of how the hard work does translate to the next level. So very deserved call up, and I'm happy to see him playing really well here. He's picking up guys 94 feet, making them uncomfortable, uses his speed and his quickness. He's a tough guy to keep in front of, that's for sure. So he's leveraging that really well, and they're making the right read whenever he breaks down his initial defender.
And then there's the third 905er playing regularly for the Raptors right now, 3/10 of the rotation. Mo G has been getting minutes, and it's been a fun story. Another guy was coming off the bench in the G League last year and is now getting NBA time. You know, not quite the same level of opportunity as Javon and Kobe and Jamias before that. And you guys, you know, have obviously liked him as more of a long-term thing. Even his two-way deal is a multi-year deal. Maybe not as ready for the NBA minutes as a couple of those other guys, but what are you seeing from him in terms of the ability for that energy level to affect the game, even in a small role at the NBA level?
For sure. I mean, the first thing you're always going to talk about with Mo G is how great a guy he is. He's super smart, charismatic. Everybody likes hanging out with him. Just a great dude all around. And his defense is up there with anyone. Like, when you drive to the rim, you better keep an eye out for where Mo G is, because he can block anyone's shot no matter what league he's in. And he's shown that a couple of times with the Raptors so far, which is awesome. His ability to change ends for his position is awesome, too. He can run the court. And in the open court, he's trouble. Like, once he gets his takeoff and he gets his 2 feet under him, watch out, rim. Like, he goes flying. So he's still got, obviously, room for growth like everybody does. And I'm excited to see him finish out the season the right way. And like you said, with the multi-year thing, have a great summer with us. And he'll probably even take it off even further next year.
How helpful is that? So Mo, Javon, DJ Carton, who I know is out with the ankle, that bad ankle injury, but all of those guys are on multi-year deals where, you know, normally this time of year, with your Grady's or whatever, I'm sure you guys as a coaching staff are starting to formulate the development plan for the offseason, what next year could look like. But a lot of times with these two-way guys or guys who got a 10-day and things like that, it's impermanent. You don't know if you'll have them for summer league. You don't know if you'll have them for next year. You've got a couple of these guys now in the organization for multiple years. How helpful is that for you guys as you kind of plot out, you know, where these guys could go with the org over the next, I don't know, 18 months?
It's amazing because, especially in the G League and really any league, you don't want to be doing too much tweaking with a guy's game in the middle of the season. There's game day after day after day. But to know that you're going to have a few months of opportunity without any games. So even before summer league, you know, like you have April, May, June to really work on your craft. And now you can start to break things down. Now you can start to fine tune your game and tweak things that you think need tweaked, both from the player's perspective and the coach's perspective. So if there's areas you want to work on and kind of restructure, this is the time to do it. Once summer league starts, then everybody wants to be playing basketball and be in playing shape. And then kind of that carries over to August and training camp. You don't want to do too much before training camp. So these spring months, great opportunity, and to know that the guys are going to be with you, as opposed to G League guys, whether they're returning or not to the 905, you don't know necessarily, you don't get the opportunity to work together as much.
Want to focus on you for a moment here. This was your second season with the team. Where have you, and your second season as a head coach? You know, people know your story. I wrote it, you know, coming up through the analytics department and then the assistant coaching staff on the Raptors side. 2 years in with head coaching in the G League now, where has your growth come as a coach and just your overall experience these last 2 years?
Yeah, you go into the first year, you don't really know what you don't know, right? So after the first year, it's great. You have a lot of time to reflect and say, hey, what would I like to do differently next year? And it's a great opportunity to actually go out and do it. So I realized early on, and I knew this going into the job, the importance of the relationship building and getting to know the guys. But I really put a lens on it this year and made sure, and it was a great group of guys. We were very fortunate. Like every player who played for the 905 this year, pleasure to be around, you know, somebody you'd want to grab a coffee with, grab a bite with. And we did a lot of that this year, which was great. And when you get to know guys better and you kind of see where they're coming from, it makes some of the tougher conversations easier. It can be really difficult at times. And it's a league that's not necessarily fair. So if there's a bunch of assignment guys or two-way guys, regardless of how the game's going, they're going to get their minutes. That's the purpose of the league. So a guy who might have just had one of their best games of the season, scored 20-some points and get their 35 minutes, the next night they might only be getting spot minutes. And that can be really tough on guys. It's not always a meritocracy. So to be able to have those relationships in place and get to communicate what's happening and why it's happening helps a lot.
And to your point off the top, you know, again, this despite the record, so many of these guys are heading into the offseason in a better place than they were at the start of this season career-wise. So as long as you can, you know, communicate that and keep everyone kind of hanging on to the rope in that regard. This is a bit of an inside basketball nerd question, but I know some of where your interests lied as an assistant, and I'm curious how different, like when you're actually drawing up a play in a timeout, like forget the like system stuff that you're implementing and stuff, but the actual ATO stuff, how much different is that like when you're actually on the sideline trying to execute it? And like, did that remain a really fun part of the job or is it too stressful?
No, that's a super fun part, I would say. One of the most fun parts for sure, the in-game coaching. It's actually even more fun in this position because you kind of have the Rolodex of plays in your head of stuff that might work. And then you do all your prep ahead of time and you say, oh, this is a team that likes to switch 1 through 4 and be in coverage for the 5. And then the game happens and you see they're doing something different. You're like, oh, I've got a great ATO against that coverage. I'm going to be able to whip this one out. And when it works, you know, it's really fun. And the G League timeouts are short. So you better be on top of your stuff so that way you can read the game in real time, see what's going on out there, figure out what the weakness is the other team's doing and go after it. So it is pretty cool to be able to, after all the years of kind of building up that Rolodex of plays and getting the opportunity to go out and execute some of them.
Nice. And it's a lot of fun to watch, man. Glad you guys got to end the season with a couple of wins, actual wins, and a couple of wins with guys like Javon and Kobe and Mo contributing to the Raptors. Eric, thanks so much for taking the time out, man.
I appreciate you having me on.
All right. That was Blake's interview with Eric Corey. We have very little time before we go, but yeah. What did you make of Eric's season?
Yeah, it's tough, man. It's always tough to evaluate when, like, literally there are games where, again, that's not an exaggeration, they are Ubering players in last minute. Like, this is the G League version of Malik Williams last night, but at least Malik Williams was playing at a G League level against some NBA players.
Sure.
They had to call people off the couch to play in game. So it's hard to evaluate that. You know, they didn't perform super well in late and close situations until the very end of the year. Maybe you ding them for that. But, you know, most of these times we're evaluating the coaches down there on the individual player development. You look at Grady, if Javon's a guy, Jonte before the Jonte stuff happened, I think you can see enough good there to get past the record.
Fair enough. Okay. All right. That does it for us today. I've been your host, Willie. You've been listening to the Raptor Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network, brought to you by Campbell's new Chunky Spice Soup. It's time to get fired up. Big thanks to everybody working on the show today. Thanks to Garrett Temple and Eric Curry for joining us, and we'll be back tomorrow.